everybody for being here for the SDR Divisions Distinctiveness Dialogue Series. In this series, we look at different fields, compare their fundamental assumptions behind their theories, and try to understand how we can cross-pollinate. In this case, we are looking at strategy and org design. And if you notice, it's a bit slightly different because a lot of people would say strategy is org design. What do you mean by distinctiveness, right? So in that sense, we changed the idea just slightly, where we are essentially saying we are going to be discussing how theories of org design and problems in org design, how they address and help us address fundamental issues in strategy, and how org design decisions, when and what kind of org design decisions are strategic decisions. So we have four wonderful panelists today. We have in alphabetical order, we have Professor John Joseph from UC Irvine, Professor Leventhal from Wharton, Professor Puranam from INSEAD, and Professor Zenger from Utah. Warm welcome and big thanks to all of our panelists. Thank you very much for taking time to be with us here today. And welcome to all the audience members. So just a quick admin, the panelists will discuss the topic. Each of them will take about 10 to 12 minutes. Then we'll have panelists discussing other panelists' remarks. And then we will open it up for Q&A. For Q&A, please either raise your hands or type your questions in chat. And we'll go from there. So thank you again. Wonderful to have you all here. And I cede the floor to Professor Joseph.
Thank you. I will share my screen. One second here. Yes, thank you very much for the invitation. And it's always a pleasure to see familiar faces and, of course, humbled when you're on a panel like this with my fellow scholars of design, if I might use that label. So can you see my slides? Yep. Okay. So, okay. All right. Let's see my timer is. Okay. So the question that we were posed was, how does organization design research for the research and strategic management? And then the first one here goes to the characterizing research in this field and specifically core questions and assumptions. So for this, I'm drawing on work I'm doing with Metin Sengel and a review piece for JOM. I sort of break it down into four different kinds of questions. The first is, characterize the basic question here. So, and I'm guessing this is going to come up a lot, is, org design examines the appropriate division of labor and integration of effort in an organization. And of course, others, Finis and Oliver and colleagues and Marcus have expanded on this, but I think ultimately it comes down to differentiation and integration. I'll add two other things here. And this is out of the Journal of Organization Design, but there's, I think, an effort in this field to one, be future oriented, i.e. sort of drawing on Simon's idea that design is concerned with how things ought to be. And second of all, that it's managerial oriented, very similar, right? We're looking to give managers concerns, address managers, entrepreneurs who face design organizations largely in support of better performance. I think this is why it dovetails nicely. Although I think org design got its foundations in org theory, it's interesting that strategy, I think, has taken up the mantle much more so, I think, in the last few decades. So the basic model I see in this research is generally you have some competitive institutional, technological interaction environment. This impacts org design in some way. Org design has some influence on individual beliefs, representations, mental models, attention, resource allocation, knowledge, routines, feedback, search, et cetera. And then, of course, this is all in support of some outcomes, including performance, survival, behavior, decision-making, and in some cases, actually structure itself. The four categories, the way that actually Metin and I are thinking about this is, first of all, you have a set of org design studies that are sort of configurational. And this views the organization as a set of design choices or contingencies. And the key design problem here in support of better performance is to create a fit among the firm's goals, activities, structures, peoples, et cetera, really creating internal and external fit. Second is control. These studies tend to view the organization as, again, a collection of individuals, each with their own preferences, skills, and goals. And the key design problem here is to mitigate costs associated with delegated decision-making and really aligning organizational and individual goals in support of organizational outcomes. The third we call channelizing. This is borrowed from Simon, of course, who said, who viewed sort of the organizations, at least in the early work, as an entity which provides stimuli and attention directors that channel behavior. And here the key design problem is establishing a higher level context that shape decision premises for individual decision-making and action. And the last one is coordination. These studies tend to view these individuals and groups who must consider each other, right? And coordinate in making decisions. And here the org design problem is aiding these interdependent actors to coordinate in support of better performance. So that's kind of the lay of the land, or that's how we've sort of divided up. I would like to point out that I think one of the underlying commonalities across the board, obviously these views tend to not view the firm as, for example, a nexus of contracts. It's a very much, an idea of plurality of individuals' goals and interests. It's very much a bounded rationality assumption across these views as well. So now, in terms of dealing with these key pieces and questions and how they can in fact address them, the Rimmelt and the Leblein et al. And so, the question is, how do firms behave? How does it help us think about why firms are different? The heterogeneity question, and of course, the question around what is strategic, interdecisional, interactor, intertemporal. It's interesting here, Like strategic management, there isn't, and some might argue, there isn't a theory of organization design. And I think that's actually quite important, at least not in the philosophy of science sense, right? It wouldn't hold up, in other words, to that, I think, stringent definition. And I think it's more useful to conceive of org design as a collection of ideas and mechanisms and hypotheses and implications for managing the organization and solving the differentiation and integration problems that I mentioned before. I think what it has done well is incorporates a set of predictions among these variables, features and some sort of performance outcome or decision-making. So just to name a few of these relationships, which I think bear quite directly on strategic management. One is the near decomposability hypothesis. Of course, this is a very old one. But that there are evolutionary advantages to this particular organizational structure. And I think this relationship is useful in that it can be applied to understanding variations in performance and reflections of the environment to the degree to which they're accurate, that they accurately reflect the environment, internal or external. Second is the M-form hypothesis. So this was the sort of held up as the form which comes closest to the neoclassical profit maximization. But, understanding the boundary conditions of the M form can help us better understand the evolution of new organizational forms that we're seeing, right? So, in strategy, there were a lot of questions about platforms and communities and how that's different from the large organizations. And I think these basic baseline hypotheses is quite useful. The information decentralization hypothesis, that greater information allows for more decentralization, and the mirroring hypothesis, everybody's probably familiar with that one, both offer predictions which have something to say about the relationship between technology, design, and performance. And I think understanding these relationships are important to understand how the external environment is impacting information processing, communication, or capabilities in terms of heterogeneity. I also think, you know, these areas in org design can tell us a lot or get us started on the AI question and how that's going to impact strategic management as well. And then the fit hypothesis. So the idea that fit among contingencies will yield better performance. And here I think, again, this is sort of very useful. A lot of the recent stuff here is on knowledge as an important contingency. And I think, you know, as we think about management, external open innovation, or, you know, accessing knowledge externally, this becomes an important factor. So again, a series, I think, of well-established relationships that are particularly useful that can offer some insights on the side of heterogeneity. So then what exactly are important topics? I think that org design might be particularly suited to help answer. Well, one of the big ones, multiple goals, logics, and performance outcomes. I will just get a plug in here from my paper with Viba in the Annals in 2020. Here, we are very conscious about discussing, you know, how structures are and institutional pressures are filtered through organizational structure and how this impacts the organization. Ecosystems, platforms, crowds, communities. I think this is an important one, particularly for, you know, thinking about the relationship between organizational forms and value capture and creation here. I see there's a lot of emphasis, both trying to understand the structure side of these things, but also when do you see value capture, when do you see value creation, seems like a fertile area that folks are interested in. Culture and heterogeneity, the idea here that, you know, culture is emergent, but it's also planned. And trying to understand how that impacts. Of course, adaptation, a longstanding subject in strategy here. We're seeing a lot more on dynamics in design, meaning design isn't you're like a once and done thing, but you do it and you must continually do it, right? So the implications for adaptation, learning, I think are quite useful. And then, you know, I'll go back to AI decision-making and strategy here. I think there's a lot to be said for how digital twins, generative AI will affect things like the division of labor, specialization, and integration. Just in terms of expanding theories, I think there's so many. This is just more really just a few that came to the top, but obviously RBV, thinking about knowledge and scale-free assets. I think TCE, particularly bringing together incentives and information perspectives in linking organization design to strategy. And then my own work on ABV and BTOF, there's lots of work going on in this space. I think DEI, both how organization affects DEI and how DEI contributes to performance outcomes is a very important link. I mentioned generative AI, and then I think communication, language, and vocabularies. And I think this is an important one, not just taking vocabularies as reflective of other constructs or as epiphenomenal, but that actually this is substantive in the way, language affects the way we act, and therefore the performance differences we can see. And I think structure has a big impact on those vocabularies. Okay, that's it.
Wonderful. Thank you, John. We will now move on to Professor Leventhal. You're muted, Dan.
Okay, visuals and voice here. All right. So John did a really terrific job, I think, laying out a lot of the core kind of questions. In some ways, maybe mine will be some surrounding wrapping paper. I'm kind of more the meat of things. And perhaps some useful backdrop. So it strikes me in ancient days, maybe when I was a young scholar, there seemed to be a division of labor within the field. So there was content, that was kind of what was important, And one of the ways we knew about it was economists addressed it and Michael Porter addressed it. And then there was this sort of little old thing in the corner, you know, we'd leave to org design and, oh yeah, there's an implementation problem. We figured out your strategy and here's sort of a residual thing. And you know, clearly kind of secondary. I think what's kind of interesting over the sort of broad arc of time, right, that we've now gone to some sensibility that strategy is not kind of just this kind of coming out of the most awesome consultant singular mind, but strategy as some collective act that actually, right, lots of people in the room, maybe in some interaction, may form some useful ideas. And we're coming increasingly sensitive to, it might be a good idea if those people in the room didn't all look and dress alike, some element of diversity in terms of that conversation. So those are important ideas. In some ways, they're kind of a backdrop to interest folks have been talking about in moderately recent years, the so-called wisdom of the crowd, or as I qualify, possible wisdom of the crowd. Crowds can do some pretty horrific things. So if it's 1906 and you want to understand what the right best guess of what the weight of a hog is at the county fair, it turned out taking the average of 800 fairgoers gave you a really good estimate. So a Galton telling us about a peer aggregation process. Sociologists have had lots of fun, you know, useful contributions about network structures influence the diffusion of ideas and beliefs. Barcher's 91 paper is not, I think, probably typically encoded as a mutual learning story, right? There, Jim offered us some really powerful ideas at the outset, but if you think about the model itself, it's a mutual learning process between individuals, their beliefs, and this aggregate called the code. And, you know, a long set of really important ideas and work. But what I'd suggest is, you know, organizations are not just ways in which we aggregate belief. So we don't form an incorporation to understand what we think is the best K-pop band. We don't do it as a form to debate whether vaccines are a useful public health intervention or some international conspiracy. Organizations do things. They create the new smartwatch. Our dinners that we're going to eat tonight, if you haven't already eaten dinner in your time zone, whether explicitly a restaurant organization or some retail establishment providing you the input to your own cooking, they do stuff. So Ozakan and Finish and I, in a recent org science piece, tried to kind of tee up this dual issue of what's a good idea and some collective action and energy around the execution and carrying out that idea. So I just want to distinguish between this sort of social structure, the belief formation, and social structures about that also involve action and effort. So yes, organizations are important arenas in which we can share, contest ideas. But there's also, you know, action, even the experimentation. So we might have this sort of stylized image of, you know, the solo adventure and they have this backpack and the ice pick and they're climbing some big scary mountain. Well, no, that adventure had a base camp. They're probably tied to a rope to seven or other people. And even this romanticized adventuring activity is typically a group activity. So exploration involves convincing more than one other person. Maybe this is a useful thing to do and some coordination around what that initiative might look like. So in that light, what I kind of want to push is distinguish between the design of experiments. So currently there's a lot of energy and sensible useful energy that the scientific method turns out not only to be a good idea for us as social scientists, it actually might be a useful idea for managers. And I think that's an important observation, useful think about how that may carry out. But as John, you know, per some of John's remarks, I think the design of experiment is a different question from the design of experimenting organizations. And just kind of tee up that contrast and maybe make a few lots of useful observations in that light. So one of my, among my recurring tropes rants is when teaching your scholars, PhD students, is the importance of level analysis, right? And so we can have adaptation occurring at multiple levels. So Schumpeter famously is telling us about industry disruption, the gales of creative destruction. So it's happening at industry level. Let me also take that as a historical footnote. So Clay Christensen made us all a whole lot smarter and insightful about industry dynamics. And sometimes you can think about Clay was giving us a sense of the mechanisms underlying the sort of macro phenomena that, kind of Schumpeter was pointing to. In our contemporary Disney, there's a lot of interest around the lean startup, interesting phenomena, interesting work. But in this light, I think it's the observation I think possibly useful is as a convenient shorthand, just like neoclassical economists would think about the owner entrepreneur, like, you know, we and the theory of the firm is of its production function. Much of that discussion implicitly treats the firm as if it's a owner operator, a single individual trying to experiment. They learn, they pivot, they do stuff. Even the lean startup tends to be more than one person. There is some collectivity. Now, maybe that collective only has enough resources and money for pizza to do one thing through this collective action at a time. But this kind of the conversation, developing some collective energy around a direction is still something happening in that relatively tinker scale organization. Not that I am creating some structural equivalents across these books, but the, you know, so my recent work trying to kind of, you know, building on existing kind of traditions, but think about the organizations itself as a interesting unit in which evolutionary dynamics happen. And let me just emphasize a little bit of that first bullet. It links to some of the things that John was teeing up. So what do we mean by strategic? Okay. It's stuff that's distance in time and space. Well, if it's distance in time and space, for some of my old work with Jim March on the myopia of learning, that says feedback systems might be challenged, right? Because I take an act and immediate consequences may not be that indicative. So one of the things that I kind of argument I kind of push is this idea of organization as a artificial selection slash feedback environment. It's not necessarily a prisoner of what the immediate market feedback is. It can create its own metrics, its own belief schemas about what gradients of progress look like. And I think for me, that's a really critical feature of what defines an organization. So you know, we have a variety of theories of the firm. For me, the organization as a corporate entity gets profit and loss and various market outcomes, and it gets to decide what that means for initiatives and actors within it. Obviously, that raises complex questions. If there's going to be some loose coupling between the goal structure of the organization and the sort of immediate market outcomes or what the financial market said the firm was worth the next morning, then, well, what are these selection criteria? How do they get defined? How do they get tested over time? You know, it becomes quite important. And then, you know, fundamentally, adaptive dynamics have two kinds of mechanisms. So a given path may modulate. So we have path dependence and possible moves to what would become the adjacent possible initiatives. We were working on this technology, this product, and we wake up one day and see some adjacent technical market opportunity. And furthermore, the organization itself is culling and amplifying the initiatives within it, i.e. internal selection and reinforcement processes, right? And those are sort of the two fundamental ways this organizational level adaptation might take place. And so pushing on this idea of, yes, good experimental design is nice, but that's an important, but there's a sort of a separate question is not unrelated, is designing the experimenting organization. Kind of issue that John teed up initially. So, you know, I'm trying to, in some sense, imperialistically flip the script a little bit, okay? If back in the corner, back in the day, org design was this little corner, and oh, let's worry about implementation and rationalization of some clever strategy, maybe revisit. So yes, ideas, you know, ultimately we individuals have ideas and concepts and frameworks inform their ideas, and not only their individual ideas, they become the some ways the social context in which we can have interesting conversations. You know, we drew the 2x2, and we all went to this MBA classroom. That becomes a kind of Beth Betschke like common touch point by which we have conversations. So they're both animating our cognitive frameworks, the ideas we might come up with, but they're also the sort of shared mental space in which we talk. And that conversation occurs in something called organization. And so moving from the corner of limitation to be perhaps the foreground about how superior strategies are identified and emerge. So thank you. I hope that's of interest.
Thank you, Professor Leventhal. Now we will move on to Professor Purana.
Thank you. All right. So I'm going to skip over some of the parts that John already covered and Dan touched on. So you know, we are converging on broadly similar statements. So what are some central issues in strategy? John already gave you a quick overview. I want to add maybe a third one, which has certainly helped me to orient my work to strategy, which is the field is really about understanding sources of performance differences across organizations and their implications for managers and policymakers. And that's been very much, I think, the way I've thought about strategy. This is how the AOM Strategic Management Division defines its mission statement as well. It's quite consistent with Rumer, Chandler, and Thies, 94. And if you look at the Strategy Science Journal's mission statement, we are honored to have both the former editor and the current editor, chief editors here on this panel. They're both quite explicit in saying they're interested not just in firms, but organizations. Okay, so not just firms, but other forms of organizations and their performance differentials. So in contrast, what is org design about? So org design is about the study of organizations, as you can imagine. And we think about organizations as multi-actor, goal-oriented systems. So it's a pretty broad definition. And John already teed this up. The core issues are about division of labor and integration of effort. I wrote an entire book about this theme. The one-line summary is organization is aggregation. Okay, so it's a multi-actor system. So basically, it's about how do you disaggregate the goal and how do you re-aggregate the effort. That's basically what it's all about. The Journal of Org Design, which in fact John and Metin Sengel were co-editors for a while, and now it's Brian Wu and Oliver Bauman, gives the following definition in its mission statement. It says, organization design analyzes how organizations of any kind work and how they can be made to work better. And in particular, I want to highlight, they say its interest is in structures, systems, and processes, as well as emergent phenomena. Okay, so a few things to point out here. It's not only about firms. So there can be not-for-profit, there can be government organizations, there can be NGOs. Org design is interested in all these kinds of organizations. It's also entities which are at the sub-firm level, so things like divisions and teams, as well as the supra-firm level, which are like ecosystems and meta-organizations. We think of all of these as organizations per the definition given here, and we believe our arguments apply to all of them. It's also worth pointing out that unlike how perhaps org design used to operate 2 or 3 decades ago, increasingly the interest is not just in formal structure, but also the indirect levers that affect the emergent phenomena, such as culture and networks. And finally, just to underline a point John already made, it's a strongly normatively oriented field. So the word design is both a verb to design, as well as a noun, what is the design of the organization. So that's roughly speaking what the field is all about. You can think of it as a branch of org theory. The term org theory for me, I've always found slightly annoying because I don't know which theory, there are so many, and why theory? There are so many, most of the work is practical actually and empirical, but let's use that label. Unlike many of the other theories within organizational theory, organizational design work is really focused on this question of how things work and how to make them work better. And you can contrast that, for instance, with say ecology, institutional theory, resource dependence theory, or even inter-organizational networks research. And it does lead to what I call the organizational design stance. I think this permeates the work of pretty much everybody who works in this field of organizational design. And the stance looks like this. It says, given the system is doing something, what can we learn about how it's doing what it's doing and how it can possibly do it better by treating it as an organization? Okay, and that's kind of a fairly subtle and sophisticated position, I think, because it neither requires people in the system to think of themselves as an organization, right? It allows for a design without a designer, so some kind of selection process can produce it. but it always focuses on the same two big questions. So how does division of labor happen and how does integration of effort arise? So John said there isn't one theory in the field, but I think there is actually one, and it was the last one at the bottom of his slide. And that's basically the theory of fit. It can be expressed in one sentence. Given an organization and its goals, there must be three kinds of fit. There has to be fit between the division of labor and integration of effort. This is mirroring. There has to be fit between different kinds of integration of effort, formal and informal structure. And broadly, there has to be fit between these two internal elements and the goals of the system. So that's the one theory in the field. And I would argue it's enough, actually. I'm not sure we need more. The rest is all about mechanisms and details which you apply to particular contexts. Okay. And of course, these solutions can be chosen in a more or less centralized manner or in a more participative, distributed manner, if you like. So the implication of all of that is if you're looking at any system which has this property of being multiple actors with a goal, then you can take, in my view, organizational design stance towards it. And in fact, we have. So if you look at the list of phenomena here, there are very nice organizational design papers on each one of them. Some of them are mine, many of them are not. But each of these has been quite profitably studied as an organization design problem by asking, if this is an organization, what's its design? How does it do division of labor? How do we do integration of effort? So one question that sometimes comes up from PhD students in particular is, they have this intuition that strategy is all about performance, right? So where is performance in these studies of organization design? It's there, but it's sometimes a bit subtle. So it's there in two forms. So case one, we have some function like this, which says there's a performance outcome, which is a function of the resources or contingencies the organization has and its design. Okay. Here, the usual challenge is how do you exogenize the design and get causal inference about this relationship? But that's no different from the problem of estimating the effect of strategy on performance. It's exactly the same thing. Okay. And we have to be clever about finding instruments, partial exogeneity, or run experiments of some kind. But the second is a little bit more subtle, where the observed design is explained as a function of contingencies of the task environment or the cultural environment or the social environment and expected performance. So here the link between design and performance comes either through anticipatory reasoning. So as a designer, I look forward and say, here's what I need to design for, exactly like in transaction cost economics, right? It is the classical formulation exactly like that. Or it could be that people do things at random and economic selection kills all the bad choices. It could, of course, be some combination of these. So in both of these styles of reasoning, there is actually always a very tight link between performance and organization design, even if there is no regression table in the paper with performance as a variable. I think that's the main point I wanted to highlight here. So I have really two broad conclusions here. The first is that as long as the entities whose performance differences we're interested in, these are firms, teams, ecosystems, if these are multi-actor systems, then arguably you need an organizational design perspective because it's the only one we have that allows us to understand how aggregation happens by looking at multiple actors towards a common goal, right? Conversely, the only time you don't need org design to tackle a strategy question is if you think that all the strategy happens in the mind of one powerful actor and execution is trivial. So if you have a one-person startup where everything is executed through smart contracts, that's a strategy context in which you don't need org design. Arguably, everywhere else you do. The second conclusion is that actually there is a strong complementarity between organizational design and aspects of strategy that I don't think we have exploited enough to really understand and get our teeth into, and that's the following. If you think about resource-based view, one of the most central ideas in our field in strategy, it explains performance differentials as a function of variation in resources, okay? And resources are very broadly defined. Now, what organizational design does is it explains performance differentials, or it can explain performance differentials among firms that have otherwise identical assets, including human capital. So the only difference comes from the aggregation process that connects that human capital, which really means that I think the capabilities view of strategy, which is about routines, about knowledge sharing, dynamic capabilities, however you want to think about it, these are multi-actor systems. And I think there's a very strong natural affinity between thinking of those systems, whether these are teams, departments, groups, doesn't really matter. If these are micro-organizations, then everything we know about organization design and that basic folk theorem of fit all apply. Okay, and I think that's really a very interesting domain that we would want to spend more time thinking about. I just want to flash a couple of papers from recent issues of SMJ, which kind of make this link, I think, very, very salient. So, you know, think about Kim and McAdoc's really nice paper on unpacking the O in VRIO. This is really a classic RBV strategy paper, but it is also very much an org design paper. It's really focusing on the question of interdependence. Metin and Teing's paper on multi-divisional firms and the formation of their divisions. Very interesting application of org design thinking to collective action in the Maasai Mara by our friends Dorte and colleagues. You could look at a paper on platforms and ecosystems. This is one of the hot topics in strategy right now. A very nice editorial by Toby and others, taking an explicitly org design perspective on this issue. Lovely paper on adaptation in multi-divisional firms. So taking classic M-form divisional structure issues and explaining them using org design ideas. And last but not the least, a very nice recent paper by Harsh and Machek in SMJ on non-hierarchical bossless organizations and what kind of performance advantages they have. So let me stop there and turn it over to Todd. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Panish. So now we'll move on to Professor Zenger.
You're seeing my slides there. There we go. So I appreciate the opportunity to think about these issues, and I think much of what I will say will resonate with what others have said, but perhaps framed in a little bit different in a different way. So in just thinking about this, you know, what is organization design? This I stole from the organization design community website. I don't know if this is from Huber or who wrote this, but here, this is the verb version of organization design, the process of choosing characteristics of organization's primary features, historically the characteristics of its strategy, core technology, and structure, but more recently also the characteristics of employee culture routines that the designer intends for the organization to possess. I think that is a perfect description of strategy as well, right? So it's strategy taking into account the implementation features of it, but it's very much about a sense of fit among choices, including in those choices what the actual strategy is. You know, my own thinking about what strategy is reflected in this paper with Michael and Jeff, and others have mentioned this notion that it's about choices, and in particular choices that are interdependent with other choices, and that that strategy is therefore not the study of independent decisions or decisions in relative isolation, but rather the study of these interdependent decisions. And of course, as soon as we start talking about interdependent decisions, this central issue of fit emerges and really becomes the centerpiece of what strategy is, I think. And, you know, this paper, we talk about sort of different types of interdependence that might arise, but the fundamental issue is that strategies then seek to elevate performance or achieve some goal by orchestrating some complementary pattern of choices. Typically, we think of this as playing out in an environment of uncertainty. And I guess, you know, one of the things, you know, that I think is really interesting to think about is the degree to which, and I'll talk about this more in a minute, the degree to which we're talking about sort of internal fit versus external fit, right? Is this fit to the environment, or is this fit to, in some internal sense, fit with the strategy, fit with some belief structure? My own push is, of course, toward this notion of internal fit, and that strategies really are theories about how to orchestrate choices, in particular to solve problems. In this sense, really building on sort of Simon's thinking here as well, that theories are derived from problem formulations and express some kind of causal logic about how to solve problems, that these theories permit sort of counterfactual inference about what might happen when particular actions are taken. And these theories provide some guidance to this process of orchestrating these choices. And these are not, you know, grand theories. This is not organization theory or organization design theory. These are actor specific theories about how to orchestrate these choices. I love this quote from Simon, this notion that there's sort of a continuing two-way interaction between the gradual construction of the problem representation and the construction of the theory that uses it. And so the act of strategy or the act of organizational design is thinking carefully about the problem that one's trying to solve, which ultimately defines the goal that one's trying to achieve, and then thinking about you know, what's your theory about how to solve this? And this then orchestrates the set of actions and choices that an actor makes. So what are theories? These are not focused on necessarily representing the environment, rather they represent these actor-specific beliefs and hypotheses about how to solve very focused problems. An entrepreneur's, therefore, theory of value can be thought of as a very specific type of representation, this sort of forward-looking projection of the causal structure that's specific to a problem, and a causal logic that can sort of be tested, revised, abandoned as needed. So on this issue of sort of internal versus external fit, I think this is really something that the field needs to, you know, you all, if you're working in this space, need to wrestle with. On the one hand, you know, the perspective captured nicely in this George Huber quote, the goodness of fit between a firm's design and its environment is a major determinant of a firm's performance. To get the design wrong is to lose out on those competitors that get their design right. This is in contrast to an approach which is different actors can have different theories, they're focused on different problems, and that this fit is much more of an endogenous exercise, that central dimensions of fit and alignment are specific to the entrepreneur, specific to some actor that's composing a theory of value about how to orchestrate this fit. And obviously these are not completely distinct, but I think it's important, you know, which one you're emphasizing when you think about this idea of fit. I'll just sort of quickly plug, you know, this is a paper that Teppo and Rob Webker and I have been working on recently. It's about to come out in Strategy or SMJ that basically takes this idea that entrepreneurs have these unique theories of value, and that then a whole sequence of choices, you know, you can sort of classify these theories into three categories and sort of think about then a whole sequence of downstream choices that emanate from these different classes of theories. And this is, you know, and this is a strategy paper, and this is clearly an organization design paper. So I'm not gonna go through this in any detail, but it's sort of saying, look, here there are theories about arbitrage, theories of sort of recombination, theories of specialization or co-specialization. And you can think about different choices that emanate from these unique types of theories. That's a design approach to this kind of question. Notice a typical strategy research approach would be much more looking at these vertical questions, right? So should firms be more or less secret? Should they, how should they, you know, experiment optimally? You know, how should they manage asset ownership? And an organization design perspective is all about thinking about these contingencies, what it is about the unique natures of particular classes of strategies or theories and how that then shapes different design choices. This is, I think, a better version of strategy taken seriously, this idea of organizational design. All right, the last point I want to make before I just say a few summary things is that if strategy is a design task involving interdependent choices, I think it's interesting to think about the implications for empirical analysis and strategy. So the whole trend clearly in empirical work and strategy is about isolating causal effects, that is isolating the effect of a single choice on performance. And I would argue that almost by definition, the further down that path you go, the less strategic the decision is that one is looking at, right? If strategy is about orchestrating complementary decisions, then one's capacity to isolate the effect of a single choice on performance is very problematic to the field of strategy. In some sense, the least strategic choices are additive to performance. And unfortunately, the most empirical setups now are pushing toward really an additive framing to thinking about the impact on performance. So we're moving, you could argue, in the empirical, you know, space and strategy toward less and less strategic questions. And the question, you know, I think organization design offers a very different framing, which is how do we think about sets of decisions, orchestrated sets of decisions, and how they impact performance? And argue that's much more central task to the field of strategy than this current empirical trajectory. All right, a few concluding thoughts. Strategy is fundamentally about design. Empirical strategy is focused on establishing really, I think, average treatment effects, sometimes with efforts to establish boundary conditions. And this is often a fair distance from work on design, which I think is much more central to strategy. Organization design scholars, I think, are really well positioned to make substantive contributions to strategy, especially as they link strategies to sort of comprehensive designs, and that strategy scholars should embrace, you know, strategy's Chandlerian roots, thinking about strategy structure, and really think about much more Williamson-like, TCE-like discriminating alignment, where you think about how you explain sort of patterns of complementary decisions and how they connect to patterns of theories or strategies that firms are pursuing. All right, thank you. I will stop there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Professor Zenger. At this point, the idea was that the panelists would reflect on each other's comments and add other ideas that were sparked by this discussion. It's one of the interesting things here is pretty much all of you agreed quite a bit with each other. We'll see aggregation in action, perhaps.
What's the pairwise reflection algorithm you want us to use? Is it alphabetical or like reverse alphabetical?
Why don't we use the same format? So we'll start with John and move on.
The convergence is remarkable. I don't know, we've all been drinking the same Kool-Aid, which may not be a good thing, but not entirely. I just want to pick up one point, I think, and I think it has to do with this aggregation idea, which is, I think, everybody captured. But, you know, Phoenicia's point about, you know, organizations as multi-agent systems and the aggregation of those choices. Dan's point about adaptation at different levels. And Todd's, you know, call to perhaps think not of isolating single choices are all reflective of the fact that, you know, this doesn't come down to the one all-powerful Oz, and that, you know, we are looking at something that is both planned and emergent, even if we don't capture those two sides. I do think it is important that we recognize that we can't understand the war between nations by merely looking at interpersonal conflict, right? There are different operating principles that exist at different levels, and we definitely need to move from one to two, but we also need to move from two to many. And I think we've seen great work, many by folks that are here, You know, groups are more polarized than individuals. Top management works at a greater level of abstraction than lower level people. And so I think if we're interested in these multiple level, you know, adaptation at multiple levels, if we're interested in aggregation up through the chain, if we're interested more generally in cross-level interactions, I think we need to be very attentive to these differences that Dan was suggesting and that we all see in the aggregation processes that we all study. I think that's
beautiful. Thank you, John. Dan?
Yeah, actually, I like that, maybe coming from the University of Pennsylvania, the Quaker algorithm, where it's sort of the spirit new users for structured commentary. But so, yeah, generally in agreement, you know, with what my friends and colleagues have said. I mean, just building off of John's last remark, I felt like John was channeling his inner Graham Allison a little bit, right? So we kind of have these, you know, an interesting study of the Cuban Missile Crisis that looked at it at different levels or different mechanisms. Is it kind of a unitary actor and their kind of payoff as a unitary actor, Russia, US, and others, understanding it as a bureaucratic processes and sort of the structures around that, and as a political dynamic. And I guess is what I take from John is it's useful to think about multi-level systems. We also have a cognizant, you know, Professor Simon tells us sometimes you have to encapsulate. And so, you know, how many levels can we hold in our head and what are we trying to look at? And so I aspire to at least two levels in my work. Reese hard, that's great. Going beyond that seems maybe beyond hard. And so I think we need maybe as a community be, yes, there's aggregation, but you know, you may not be studying the neural basis of behavior when you think about kind of this collective decision-making. And so I think we need to be, I think being ecumenical as a group, like methods and approaches, you know, one could have we should care about aggregation, but be open-minded as to, you know, is it going from the neural net in my mind to my individual behavior? Is it going what to kind of open to what levels? But certainly that is a quintessential feature, presumably, of this thing called organization. Kind of get in there a bit is useful. So let me pass the remainder of my time, if it exists, to my colleague.
I can go next, Srikanth, if you're still going with the alphabetical algorithm. So since we are all in such violent agreement, I thought maybe I should introduce some slight disagreement here. So I want to pick up on Todd's point about the difference between looking at individual choices versus interdependent choices. And I think I agree in spirit, but you know, it's like this old thing about it's turtles all the way down. What's holding the earth up? So many choices, when you unpack them, that look like unitary choices actually have a sequence of nested interdependent choices within them. So at what level of aggregation do we draw the line, I think seems a bit more subjective. So to give an example, if somebody's studying the impact of group versus individual incentives on team performance, okay, and there is ecology of teams within an organization, is this a strategic decision? If it helps to explain variation in performance between teams, sure. Is this a standalone decision? Actually, it's not, because the effect of that incentive scheme is going to interact a lot with what is culturally normative within those teams and within the organization. And it will interact also with the reporting structure. So it's actually quite rare in my view to see single decision studies, because what look like single decision when you look close enough tend to be fairly interdependent. So I just like to see what Todd's reaction to that might be.
So I would completely agree. And you know, I think that, you know, for me, you know, just sort of observing the field, my concern is that we are pushing with, you know, methodologically toward single isolated, trying to sort of set this up so that we're evaluating the impact of, you know, exogenous shock or individual choice. What's the impact on performance or some exogenous shock that caused a greater frequency of a particular choice, and then its impact on performance. And yeah, my reaction is yeah, this is sort of setting aside the very basis of strategy, which is these choices are all about, are all interdependent, or not all choices are interdependent, but many choices are highly interdependent, and really strategy is about how you think about orchestrating these things. It's a design challenge. It's a design task. And so, you know, what is the right approach for us as a field methodologically? You know, should we really be pushing scholars to think about, you know, marching further and further down the causal path? Because the further down you go, that further down that path that you go, arguably the further you get from actually studying a decision that's strategic.
Yeah. Okay. No, I see where you're coming from.
That's my point. Yeah.
Got it. So on that point on exogeneity, I think I do want to add that one sentence corollary to what you said, which is, if you don't have randomization, you don't have causality. Okay. We can do all the statistics we like in the world, but actually in many cases, we don't even know if it's an improvement over control variables. There's no theorem that says it will be an improvement, right? And even with randomization, you only have causality in expectation. So the one particular instance where you randomize, we still don't know what happened. So I think this obsession around the identification stuff has been good to move the field towards more rigor. But if, as you say, it's crowding out the exploration of important strategy questions where you can't really simulate an experiment, that's not a good thing. So I wholeheartedly endorse that view.
I want to take a puzzlement, think about Todd's remarks, all of which I find compelling, but I'm trying to think about the interdependence among them. So I'm very sympathetic to the challenge of, like, you know, yes, do we study implicitly k equals zero landscapes and not particularly interesting operational things with great identification? But another thing about if the firm, the manager, the entrepreneur with their causal understanding. So that same challenge would seem to, how does the strategist of the firm then test their ideas, or are they not testing their ideas? So I'm sort of sympathetic, and I'm very sympathetic to, like, you know, yes, strategy is a sort of this theory of success and this causal thing. And then I'm just like, huh. So you get my.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if entrepreneur strategists have some sort of causal map in their head, some theory about how the world works, you know, what do we do in science? We test assumptions, we derive hypotheses, you know, we don't necessarily do the lean startup thing, which is like, put the whole thing together and then see how the market reacts. We have to be able to do something before that, especially if it's a particularly compelling grand, you know, substantive theory. And so you do what you do in science, you test assumptions, you validate, you know, implications of your theory in hopes of sort of building the confidence you need to, you know, run the big test, run the big experiment, and, you know, see if it works. But I think it's, you know, as you articulated, it's scientific method, right? You do what a scientist would do where they're unable to sort of test the theory of relativity directly. You know, I don't know what that grand test would be, but you derive implications and test the assumptions and things.
Okay, wonderful. At this time, I think we should move on to Q&A. And just to get the ball rolling, I'll, you know, throw Michael under the bus. I'm sure he has lots of questions.
Well, I don't know. Thank you for that. I was not prepared. what I'll do is first is thank you all. So I'll try not to waste your time, but I will thank you all for this. Maybe make a comment about why, when Sri approached me with this idea, I found it so intriguing. To me, and I think I'm going to agree with a lot of what has been said, but words matter. I mean, I have this quote, I read a lot of Richard Feynman just because that's what I like. And he has this quote about words can be meaningless if they are used in such a way that no conclusions can be drawn. And what I think is driving a lot of my thinking lately is, at least in the journal that's not represented in this list of speakers right now, you know, where's the strategy in the strategic management journal? And to me, there's a little bit of a discussion of, well, what does that mean? And so, you know, the article that Jeff and Todd and I wrote and Dan offered great comments on that stimulated that was part of this. What do we mean when we're using the strategy adjective? When we think about entrepreneurial strategy or HR strategy or international strategy, where's the strategy in that? And do we need the adjective? Should we be combining these fields? So, as you know, this stimulated a set of these discussions with STR. So this is, as some of you might know, is like the eighth or ninth discussion we've had. We had one that this discussion reminded me with the OMT group. And Joel Baum was talking about SO and the history of SO and, you know, how he thought. It actually reminded me of Dan's slides, where he talked about how strategy and organization, when SO was formed, were very, you know, in some sense, artificially separated. And Joel's claim was, well, these things are indistinguishable today, and they shouldn't be separated, and which is, I think, the spirit of what I heard a little bit about today. And I'd say fine, if I go back to my Feynman quote, but then why do we need two fields or two? Let's be honest about this, and maybe that means strategy goes away. I think if we get serious about this, and serious not as in community sense, but almost, I've never seen, Todd, the graph of the paper, the table you offered from the paper with Rob and Teppo. But if we start thinking about that, I found that intriguing today. I thought, because it forced me, I think if I take that table seriously, it's gonna force me to think clearly about the assumptions, whether we go vertically or horizontally, and what comes out of that discussion. Dan, I've heard you talk about the levels of analysis before. And if I think about that seriously, I probably have some things, some additional thinking about how the assumptions vary in our theories when we look at these different levels of analysis. You know, I had similar conclusions with John and Finish with your comments. I'll close with where your discussion, your group discussion started to be. You know, Todd was talking about the what's happening with our empirical research. And I think I assume everybody on this call is agreeing with that. What's, you know, was interesting to say is, well, what are the appropriate questions that we should be asking that are going to allow this field to survive? And then how do we start stimulating that discussion, particularly amongst our PhD students and junior scholars, so we're not in this trap that I fear we're in. I wouldn't have put this as eloquently as you did, Todd, but about this the trend towards isolating effects. But I sure as hell fear that we're going down this path that's sort of going to destroy the field. So I think this discussion was great for me for all those reasons, and hopefully that rambling is enough for Sri to.
Michael, maybe comment. Respond to some of it and sort of link back to something John made an important aside in his opening remarks is, you know, the field of organization theory sort of abandoned what used to be mission. I think you said, oh, what's the divide? I mean, it drifted, it followed, it shifted its level of analysis to worry about networks, social movements, institutional logics. And we think about the sociology of knowledge, oddly, feel the strategy as teaching bits of strategy becoming the day job for people who care about org theory in its kind of old school sense of how it links to organization design and performance. And not quite sure exactly what that would be like, but you know, some a data point given you're speaking from the academy. So when I was a current PhD student, I know it'd be good for him. We should submit a paper, you know. Looking at the keywords, I would have naively thought this paper on adaptive situations might find a home in the org window, but no, none of those keywords made sense for this paper. but we had easy time finding keywords that made sense in the strategy division within the academy. And so there's been this kind of interesting dynamic for the last 25 years of kind of this population institutional shift in OT, which actually is a side I think has heard it finding a market in the MBA classroom. And then so kind of somehow within the strategy field that lineage, those sets of ideas still find a home, whether or not we are actually teaching org theory to MBA students or not.
One quick anecdote, I suspect this is true, that both, I think both Dan, I know it's true of me, we were hired as organization theory scholars, not as strategy scholars, right? I assume that's true for you, Dan.
Even worse, I had a joint appointment in economics and an OB, so, but at first approximation, yeah. I was certainly not hired as a strategy scholar.
Yeah.
Muted. Okay, now I'm not muted. We'll open up for other questions. If you have questions, please type them in the chat and or raise your hand and start talking. And we'll certainly get to those. I will start with one question that has somewhat bugged me a little bit, which is when we think about the RBV, game theory, IO econ kind of strategy, and we think about the more org design, adaptation, behavioral theories of strategy. I have been curious whether our vocabulary misleads us a little bit, in the sense that sometimes we use the same word with different meanings, and sometimes we mean the same thing, but we use different words. An example I want to think of is perhaps interdependence. In your classic IO game theory kind of word, you think about interdependence perhaps differently than how Thompson describes it, or how it is used in the NK framework, perhaps. Similarly, when we think about, say, intertemporal kind of ideas, we can think about, again, game theoretically, we can think about foreclosure, we can think about commitment, we can think about entry. At the same time, perhaps we can also think about ideas like learning and path dependence. So do the panelists have a comment about this language issue, perhaps? I mean, is it just in my mind?
No, it's in everybody's minds. But I think the issue of homonyms and synonyms is widespread, right? Homonyms are same words that mean different things. Synonyms are different words that mean the same thing. But I don't know how we can standardize this, right? There's not going to be like some bureau of vocabulary that will impose a set of standards on everybody. Just imagine if you told the OB people that from now on, identification is just going to be the econometric version, right? There'll be blood in the streets. So I don't see how we can solve that problem. So I think the best we can do is just be precise about what we mean when we say something. So define your terms up front. And if people find it persuasive, they're adopted. So you raised the game theory idea. So interdependence in game theory is actually a subset of the kinds of interdependence we have in org design. It's actually interdependence between actors, right? In org design, we also talk about interdependence between tasks. And it's a particular kind of interdependence to which an equilibrium response can be formulated based on assumptions of knowing enough about the world and about how the other thinks. So it's a very special kind of interdependence. But if it's a game theory model, I know what the authors mean and I don't have a problem. It may be different from my more broader conception, but that's okay.
Because I know it's sort of not completely inconsistent, but it's sort of different pushes. And it's useful to see between the task environment and how we conceive of actors acting within it. So, the prisoner's dilemma, is a classic task structure in which game theorists can do some interesting analysis. But psychologists can also do interesting studies building that platform. And so I think there are times in which we sort of have this kind of implied link, I swear to you, a mirroring hypothesis. If this is the task structure, we're assuming, if it's interdependence across firms, we're assuming, of course, they'd be game theoretic and strategic. Well, Sire de March looked at interdependence across firms and oligopolies and a behavioral matter. So we have these ways of operating where there's sort of a norm in which, in this world, we think this way. But Kaufman gives us the NK and it's about enzymes and proteins, but we could think about that as a task environment, which sentient human beings try to make sense of. And so I just, the fact that we get typically linked in a particular way, I think it's useful to sort of decouple. And maybe that can help the language by unpacking. Are we referring to the task structure? Or are you bundling with the task structure some implicit or explicit assumptions about how we characterize actors? I think we unbundle, then we don't have to convince, we can be on safer ground.
I agree with Dan. I mean, I think implicit in your comment is a certain deference to that language. And I think that's fine, but I also think we don't need to do that. we can, as Finish said, define our terms and very clearly, and I think use them as we wish. I think the other thing to think about too is perhaps less so in something like game theory, but certainly organizational economics and OT, if you go back far enough, right, they have similar origins. And Jacob Marshak, was Simon with him at Chicago, or was he a student? Or I know there's a relationship between the two of them.
There might have been a Rand Institute. We need Mira Azor to adjudicate. But maybe Rand was a common touchstone for them.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. That's right. So, if you go back far enough, you find commonalities here as well. And although you may have one using the term information processing capacity and another one using, information acquisition costs, you very quickly realize they are the same thing, that we're not really doing different things, that, with a slight adjustment. I mean, I agree with Michael, language matters here, and I think we need to be ensure that we're consistent within our field too, right? Because I think that helps us build scientific knowledge. I think an agreement on a vocabulary is actually quite important. But I do think if you look back far enough, you realize that, well, a lot of these things have the same origins in any case.
But you do realize there's one way to make all this language game stuff disappear, right? Which is to turn everybody into a modeler. That solves the problem, right? So once you model stuff, you have to put down a formal mathematical statement of what it is. There is zero ambiguity after that. And we can just, go on with that. So, but that's a project for my, I guess, longer term time window here.
So. For those that are doing empirical work, that's really deflating.
Marlo?
Thank you so much, first of all, for organizing this panel and for being here for the panelists. This was really interesting. One comment and one cheap question. So the comment is that about 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago, I was on the job market with an org design paper. And at almost every school, I got very strong pushback on why would you study something that we answered in the 70s and 80s? So the fact that we have this panel today kind of shows that we've kind of moved org design from the fringe into more mainstream, at least, and we have something to say in terms of strategy. So that's all very, very good news, I would say. In terms of the cheap question, in every area that I'm getting feedback on, or we're going to seminars and things like that, DEI is really at the core of what's currently fashionable and what's important to talk about. I wonder whether you have some comments, and I know some of you had some slides on this, but some more specific comments on what org design and DEI combined, what does that mean? And can we make it more than just another contingency factor? So how do we bring this in, and how does it really influence org design from your perspective?
Well, I don't do work in this area, but I'll just give a good example. Was at a conference that Finish helped organize on decentralization. And Ronnie Lee at the Wharton had a very nice paper looking at hierarchy and hierarchical organizations and the opportunities for males versus females. What are the implications for that? And what does that look like? And I think, I think that's, I guess, my comment when I said DEI is something that could be explored further. Was what I had in mind, this relationship, but that, somehow we could link design choices to some of the things that DEI folks are interested in and understand either, career outcomes for those folks or you know, even extending it further to some sort of performance outcome.
Yeah, I mean, I think both Vinish and John, you know, kind of touched on, you know, Lawrence and Miller's differentiation and integration. I think what's kind of interesting is that the DEI discussion, I think, has been primarily more, you know, at the more micro group level, more of a topic of OB. I think for what, you know, John and Vinish would sort of point us to is one can also think about that in a more structural manner. And indeed, if we think about maybe, I think among the challenges there, right, if think about career paths and so on, is that it's nice to have a great group conversation, people feel inclusive, but how do career paths and opportunity structures percolate up through broader organization? And you know, I even, right, and yeah, so it's a different kind of diversity. But I think we're also recognizing, if you want, you know, diversity of ideas may come bundled with people who also look different and have difference in a whole bunch of individual attributes. And I think that's part of this kind of, you know, it's not like random draws on Spock. It turns out we're embedded bundles who have lives and histories, and those lives and histories we bring together, bring to the organization. And that's kind of the richness you want to tap into. So I think you're, as you say, there may be opportunities for the macro strategy folks to be part of that conversation, even though we're not so central in the moment.
So I would also add that if we are willing to decouple the words diversity and inclusion from specific, you know, categories of gender or race or ethnicity, the wisdom of crowds literature is about diversity, right? So is the entire notion of specialization in general is about diversity. Different people don't know different things. Different people make errors in ways that cancel each other. These are diversity arguments. You can think about inclusion also in terms of participation. So if people need to decide, but then the execution on that decision involves actions that are not contractable, okay, which is often the case, then getting buy-in becomes really important. So creating a sense of inclusion becomes more important perhaps than reaching the right outcome in terms of the decision. To make it very concrete, I have to do capital budgeting between three departments in my company, three divisions, right? I can do the NPV maximizing choice, but offend two out of three divisions who will not collaborate with the remaining third. Or I can do corporate socialism. They're all happy. Looks like a bad decision, but it gets executed extremely well and produces a better outcome, right? So there are really very interesting questions around inclusion and diversity, which don't necessarily map onto topics of ethnicity or gender, but they could as well, right? I'm just pointing out some examples.
And I would just add to that, obviously, equity is fundamentally an organizational design choice, right? I mean, it's about how you structure incentive and resource allocation systems. This is entirely an organizational design choice, right?
I mean, your great stuff with Jackson on fairness and envy and how we design to minimize those things, I think exactly nails that point.
Just a quick end to that, picking up on the finish. I think, you know, there is some good work already on mm-hmm. how structures mitigate biases in decision-making. And, you know, I think a lot of that, you know, at least one conversation in that literature, i.e. DEI, is about, well, we favor males, we favor certain people under certain conditions. And so I think there actually is a start. It hasn't looked at DEI specifically, but more generally on biases and heuristics in that structure interface that Dan was talking about. So I think, you know, I think some of the building blocks are there.
Okay, wonderful. So if there are no other questions, I would once again like to thank the panelists for taking the time and everybody for attending. Thank you very much.